Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back. Today's Daf is Reish Hashanah Chaf Gimel. We begin 10 lines from the top. Getting back to our Mishnah, we had those bonfires lit on top of the mountains to provide a signal to the Bnei Golos, Bnei Bavel regarding Kiddush HaChodesh. Says the Gemara, Ketzat Hoyu Masin Masois. The Mishnah described how they would light these fires. Mivin Kunsois Shel Erez. Take these cedar poles and use them as torches. So, on the topic of cedars, says the Gemara, how many cedars are there to be found in the world? Amar Yehuda Dalid Mine Arozim Hain. Actually, four different types of cedar trees. Erez, Kasroim, Eitz Shemen, Uberosh. What is Kasroim? Amarav Adra. Debate Rav Shila Amri, what is Kasroim? Mavliga. V'amrila, some maintain, the Kasroim is actually Zugumish. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, four different types of cedars to be found in the world. Upliga de Rabba Barav Huna. This is in dispute of Rabba Barav Huna. De Oma Rabba Barav Huna. Amri Beirav and the Beis Midrash of Rav, they maintain that Asara Mine Arozim Heim. There were actually 10 varieties of cedar in the world. Says Tosis, what's the point of discussing this? My Nafkamina. One reason could be for Mekechu Memkar, for purchase purposes. You purchased a cedar tree. What is considered cedar? So it would seem that perhaps all agree there are many subcategories of cedar trees, but regarding categories and varieties, main varieties, that's the machlokes. Rav Yehuda says only four are considered the main varieties, whereas the other ones are subcategories, and not really a true original Erez. Whereas according to Rav Huna, Rabba Bar Rav Huna, there are 10 different types of varieties within the cedar family, in which case, if you made a deal to buy an Erez, he can give you any one of those 10. How do we know there are 10? Shenemar. This is Hashem describing La'asid Lava is going to replant Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, with beautiful trees, etained by Midbar. I will replant in the Midbar Erez, Shita, Vahadas, Ve'etz Shem. So how many do we have? Erez, Shita, Hadas. We have a Hadas, which belongs to the Erez family. Ve'etz Shem. Then we have the Pasuk continuing. Asim Ba'arava. I will replant in this desolate area. Beroish, that's another one. Tidhar, that's another one. Visashur Yachtav, for a total of 7. The Gemara will ask, it's only 7, not 10. First, let's explain what these are. Erez is Arza. What is Shita? Turnisa. What is Hadas? That's the Asa. Hadasim. So apparently there was a Hadas which belonged to the cedar family. Eitz Shemen, that's Afarsima, the famous balsam tree, which produces this very pleasant-smelling oil. I actually saw one recently. It looks like a pine tree, an evergreen, and has these cones. You give them a squeeze, and they really smell amazing. So that's the famous Shemen, Eitz Shemen, the Shemen Afarsima, mentioned in the Gemara Brachas, upon which you make a special bracha, Ber Shemen Orev. That's another type. Eitz Shemen is a farsima, the type of cedar, type of evergreen. Beroish is Barta. What is Tidar Sha'aga? From which he produced expensive wood. Tashar, that's Shurivna. Okay, so we have the list and the description. Well, we're off on the number. Hani Shiva Havu. We only have 7. We're meant to have 10. Kiyasir Avdimi. When Avdimi came, he said, Haisifu Aleim. Actually, they added on them. You meant to add 3 more. Aloinim, and Almoinim, and Almoigin. What are these 3? Aloinim, that's Butmi. Almoinim, that's Bluti. Almoigin, that is actually Kasis, Rashi says, coral that you find on the seabed. Ikadamri, another version of these 3. Aroinim, and Armoinim, and Almoigin. What are the Aroinim? Ari. What are the Armoinim? Dulvi, actually mentioned in Mesechah Sukkah as a candidate for one of the Dalad Minim. Ve'ema Dulvi, the Gemara asked. And Almoigim, that's Kasisa, coral that we just mentioned. On the topic of coral, let's go to the next pasuk, describing the raging waters flowing out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. V'tzi adur lo yavrenu, even a large, powerful ship. Tzi is a ship, adur is powerful, big ship. Lo yavrenu cannot even pass through those raging waters. Amarav zu burne gedoyla, referring to a large sized ship. Heche avdu, what do they do? What's the point of having a large ship? Perhaps these things are connected to Sisrei Torah here. So what do you do with a large ship? Maisu shis alfi gavri, they would bring 6,000 men, 6,000 workers, working full-time, betresi yachishata, all throughout 12 months. Vavila, some say a little different. Tresi alfi gavri, they would have 12,000 people working b'shita yachishata throughout 6 months. So it's, either way, the same result. More people, less time, or less people, more time. And what were they coming to do? V'tani lochalo, they would fill this large ship with sand, ad the shachar, until it weighs it down and rests on the bottom of the seabed. V'noches bar amuroi, and a diver would go down. V'kotar atuni, he would tie ropes, dikisna, made of flax, strong, powerful ropes, b'kisisa, onto the roots, the bottom stems of these corals growing out of the seabed. V'kotar lu b'svint, and then take the other side of the rope, tie it onto the ship. How would they get the corals out? They would empty out the sand from those ships, v'shodul v'roy, and toss it out. As a ship lightens and rises up, a big heavy ship has a lot of power, a lot of horsepower. Akro, it will tear out, uproot the corals of Mayasya and bring it up to the top, and that's how they harvested corals. Umachlev, and it was so expensive, so valuable, umachlev, you would exchange al-chad for one portion of coral, train bakaspa, twice as much you would get in silver, so it's worth double as much as silver. It says the Gemara Tlas Parvasa Havyan, there were actually three ports that have extra significance due to the value inherent there. Tarti Be'armoy, two ports are by the Romans, V'chad de Be'parsoy, one by the Persians. The Be'armoy, the ones that have the Romans own, Mask and Kasisa, they draw, they harvest the coral from that area. They're Parsoi, the ones by the Persians. Mask and Maganaisa, that's where they harvest these jewelry, the diamonds or pearls. Umekraya, and that one is called Parvasa, the port, the Mashmahig of the Melucha, of the Malchus of the kingdom. The Yavit says, actually nowadays as well, he says near the islands of Sicily, you find lots of corals. That's the Parvasa of the Romans. And somewhere in the Persian Gulf, it says Bahrain, they come up with these diamonds or jewels from beneath the sea. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, kol shita v'shita shenotlu nochrim b'Yerushalayim. You know, for every tree at the Goyim uprooted from Yerushalayim, Oseh HaKadosh Baruch Hu lachzir lo, Hashem will restore it. Replant those trees, Lasset Lovish Nemar. That's the pasuk we mentioned, Etern by Midbar Eretz Shita. Ve'ein Midbar El Yerushalayim. Midbar is referring to Yerushalayim, Shnemar. Tzion Midbar Hoy, so it was turned into a desolate, uninhabited area. Vamar Be'echnan, Kol Alaymed Torah, Ve'ein Malabda. One learns Torah and doesn't influence others, doesn't pass it over to others to be nana from that Torah. Doimela Hadas by Midbar. He's equated to a myrtle, a hadas, a pleasant smelling plant planted in a midbar where nobody has any benefit from it. So if you learn, you don't try to teach others a bit, you're equated to this idle hadas. Igdamri, some presented this in a positive light. Kol aloyim et Torah malamda, one who does learn and teaches, b'mokim she'ein talmud chacham, when there are nobody else, there's nobody else around, b'mokim she'ein talmud chachamim, so he's the one that offers his services and teaches others, even though perhaps he doesn't see himself worthy of teaching, but for no better alternative, he is the one that offers Torah to others. Doim al hadas by midbar, he's equated to a hadas growing in a midbar, the chaviv, which is so precious, because it's so unique and hard to come by. V'amar b'yechanan, eilahem lo'idik chavim, woe to the gayim she'ein lahem takana, there's no way for them to rectify what they did to us. During the churban shnemar, material things that they looted can be restored and repaid. What about lives and nefashos of tzaddikim? Shnemar. Lost the love Hashem is going to do like this. Tachas and achoshes of his zov. To replace the copper that was looted from Yisrael, I will replenish it with gold. V'tachas abarz, lovi kesef, instead of the metal, I'll bring silver. V'tachas ha'etzem, nechoshes, to replace, to substitute for the wood, I will bring copper. V'tachas ha'avonim, barzel, instead of the stones, I will restore steel, with the metal. V'tachas ha'rab akiva v'chaver of my mevi'in, what can the goyim do to undo what they did when they killed Rabbi Akiva, tzaddikim, him and his friends, or the Arugi Malchus? There's no way to be masakin. Material things can be replenished, but not spiritual things, valeim or emer. And on them, on the killing of the chassidim of tzaddikim, the pasuk says, v'dikesi, Hashem is saying, even if I try to clean up, to be masakin for what the goyim did, to find them a kaporam, but damam, the dam of Yisrael leni kesi, I will not be able to cleanse them from that. So let's go back to the Mishnah describing those bonfires on the mountaintops. Uma'ayin hoyim asin masuis, all the way from Har HaMishcha down to Beis Biltin, which was the last stop at the edge of Eretz Yisrael facing Bob. My Beis Biltin, what exactly is that area? Amarav, Zu Biram, that's Biram, which was at the edge of Eretz Yisrael facing Goyla. My Goyla, what exactly is Goyla? Amarav Yosef, Zu Pum Bedisa, which was the main Mokim of Yishuv, of Yisraelim in Babel. And as the Mishnah says, this fellow stands on the mountain, waves his torch back and forth until he sees the whole Goyla responding by lighting fires. The Mishnah actually says he sees the whole Goyla engulfed in a Eish. What does that mean? Maikim Madura Sa'esh. What does that mean? All burning? Tanu, we learned in a Brisa. It worked like this. When the people of Bambadisa would notice this fellow on top of the base built in mountain, they would respond to acknowledge that message. Tono, kol echad ve'echad, every homeowner would take something, noitel avuka biyada, grab a torch, v'oidelirish gagai, and climb up to his roof to acknowledge the message received. And then they would pass the information on to all the other Jews living in Bab. Tanya, Rab Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Af, I have another couple of mountains for this list of mountaintops. Af Charim, V'Kayor, V'Geder, these three mountains as well should be considered mountaintops as part of this signal system going out to Babel. V'Chavriseh and their friends, meaning mountains nearby as well. Why doesn't our Mishnah mention it? Ikad Amri, some explain, Beini U'Beini Havukaimi. The mountains mentioned right here did not lengthen the chain of mountains. They were situated between the mountains mentioned in the Mishnah. Rav Lezer was just adding a couple of stops along the way to shorten the gap between one stage and the other so it's properly noticed. So he added a couple of mountains in between the mountains mentioned in the Mishnah, but it was all running on the same track. There was another way to explain Rav Shimon Lezer's addition. It was in the other direction. The mountains mentioned here were facing the other way. So he's describing a different system of signaling, going the other direction. Mar Choshev Dehai Gisa. Our Tana discusses the chain of mountains used in the signal system, going to Babel towards the north. Right, Babel is northeast of Eretz Yisrael. So he's following that channel. Urmar Choshev Dehai Gisa, whereas Reb Shimon was simply reckoning in the other direction, a little bit more to the south, from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, and that's why you would need these mountains, Chorim, Kair, and Gedder, etc. So there really isn't much of Achleikus, just a question of which direction you're going. Now, what was the gap between one mountain and the other? How far apart were they? Between each mountain you have Shmoina Parsois, 8 parsa. A parsa is 4 mil. A mil is approximately a mile, 2,000 amo. So we're dealing with a total of about 128 mil, just about that many miles. And that was from beginning to end, from Har HaMishcha all the way to Babel. So kama havaluhu, what's your total distance? Tlosna tartan, 32 parsa, between Yerushalayim and Babel, That's way too little. V'ha, idna, but take a look nowadays. To v'ha'avu, when you travel from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, the trip is way, way longer than 32 parsa. So how could this suffice? Amar Abaye, the truth is that when you draw a straight line through the airspace, it is only 32 parsa. But the roads today have become convoluted. Ista tumi, a lashon of steam, blocked off. Ista tumlu darchi Hashem, brought about by time of Golas, that the roads should become convoluted and circus and roundabout, in which case it's a long trip when traveling on land, which gives you the impression that the distance is actually greater. I'm going to pave your roads with thorns, make it hard and difficult to travel. Rav Nachman, it's like, I have another right to this. Iva means he made crooked. He bent and made my ways, my roads, crooked. Continues the mission. So we spoke about the Edom being Mechalal Shabbos on the way to Bezdin. Chatzor G'doyle Hoysi B'Yerushalayim. In fact, it was a large courtyard in Yerushalayim designated for this purpose. U Beis Yazik Hoysa Nikris was called Beis Yazik. U L'Sham Kala Edom Wisconsin, into which all the Edom would gather, awaiting their turn to be called into Bezdin. U Bezdin Boitkenoysen Sham. And Bezdin would sit down and cross-examine the Edom over there. Usudois gdoilois oisenlem. And they would serve them big meals, a big Shabbos kiddush. Vishvil shehu regil novoi, to get them in a habit of coming. You know, it was hard to do this on Shabbos, travel a distance and get stuck in that chatzar. As the Mishnah says, Berishayin alohayu zazen misham kalayayim. Initially, the halacha was, if you came outside, from outside the tchum, the halacha is you have to stay within your four amos. Or if you happen to be in an enclosed area, in a gated area, that's considered like one makam, like one dalad amos. So all these Edom, all these guests, these Shabbos guests who arrived on Shabbos from outside the tchum, they were stuck in that chatzar. That's why they made them sudas doilas, to encourage them to come regardless. So this was Berishayna. Until Hiskin, Rabban Gamliel Hazok, and he made a special takana to make it more attractive for the Edom to travel on Shabbos. And he said, look, you're not stuck in the chatzar. He was Masakin Shiyu Mahalchin Alpayim Amal Charuach. Going forward, we allow all these Edom a 2,000 Amal radius, like anybody else in Yerushalayim. We ignore the fact that you came from outside the Tchum, you came for a good purpose, a good reason. The Ramban in Erevin has a Chiddush. You know, he asks Akasha, if the halacha of boundaries of Tchumen is only Derabbanan, so this makes sense. He's Mesakin, will allow them some more than they should really have. Said the Ramban, but if Tchumen is Doraisa, how can Rabban Gamliel Hazoch be Mesakin? You know, you came from outside the Tchum, we'll give you a new Tchum. It's in Torah that they only have four Amos. Says the Ramban, a great Chiddush. Listen to this. He says, if you go outside the Tchum for the sake of a mitzvah, you haven't really traveled. The halacha of tchum is only if it's a personal business. But if you're going for the sake of a mitzvah, like kiddush achodesh, it's as though you have not gone out chutz la tchum, and that explains the takana here. Initially, they didn't want to differentiate, but they saw it was making it difficult for people and discouraging people from coming. So they reverted back to din Torah, and they ignored the fact that he traveled outside the tchum. He's considered like a Yerushalayim resident who has 2,000 amma from all sides of the city. V'loy elu b'levad. Now this halacha doesn't just apply to these fellows who came for kiddush achodesh, ela af chacham habali yalid. Likewise, a midwife who comes to assist in childbirth, and she happened to walk outside the tchum. V'abola hatzlim adlik, one who comes to rescue people from a fire, min agayas, from marauding troops, min anor, overflowing river, min apolos, collapsed building, hare elu k'anshe ir, those people assume the status of the local residents. V'yeshlem apayim amal charuach, and are given 2,000 amma radius outside the city. The Mishnah spoke about the chatzar called Beis Yazik. Iboilu, they asked the question, how do you spell it? With an ayin or without? Beis Yazik Tznan or Beis Yazik Tznan? What's the difference? Beis Yazik Tznan Lishna Ma'alyu. It's actually a positive description. A gated chatzar, a fenced off yard. He fenced it off. So it's a positive term, a nicely fenced off area for the Eidim. Oidim, or perhaps Beis Yazik Tzan, without an ayin. What does Yazik mean? Listen to that sorrow, describing the hardship, the distress that they were experiencing, locked into this jail, into this chatzar, and can't go anywhere. His fellow was tied up in chains. So which one is it? Yazik? Was it good or Yazik? Negative. Amar Abaye Tashma. Apparently it was a nice experience that they had. Sudas Gdolas Hayu Oisin Lahem. Sham Kadeshi Hu Regil Love. Look, there was meals, it was Kedusha, it was Kugel. It was an exciting event. Apparently, it's not Yazik. It's not describing distress and affliction. Dilma Tarti Havu Avdibu. Perhaps they experienced both. Difficulty on account of being restricted to this chatzar, and a pleasant experience due to the Sudas Gdolas. You can have both factors at play. So you have no raya one way or the other. So how did they go about examining the Edom? Ketzad boitken es Edom. Zuk shabarishin, the first pair of Edom, boitken oiserishin. They get examined first. First come, first serve. And they would call them in one at a time to ensure that they're really being honest in what they're saying. They don't cross-reference each other's notes. U'machnisin es ha-gadol shaben. First they call on the older one. V'oimuloyin, they ask him, Emar, please tell us, Ketzad rishis ha-lavana. What did you see over there when you saw the new moon? What was the position? What was the size? How high was it? Five questions. Firstly, lefnei achama or la'achar achama. Was it in front or behind the sun? The Gemara will explain what this is. Litzfoina or ledreima. Was it to the north of the sun or the south of the sun? Kamaya gavoya. According to your reckoning, how high in the sky was that moon? Ula'ayna hiya noite. The waxing portion, the lit portion, looks like a little sliver, like a banana. So those 2 points, in which direction were they? La'ayin ho'yinayta, where were they facing? Was it to Tzafa and to Darim? Give us an accurate description. V'kama yirachav. In your estimation, how wide was that moon? An inch? 2 inch? Im amar lefnei achama, lo yamaklum. This fellow responds, well, it was in front of the moon, in front of the sun. You know that he's not speaking the truth, which the Gemara will explain. When they were done with the first aid, they call on his friend. Once again, they would examine his aiders. If it turns out that their accounts were in line, in sync with each other, then we accept their aiders. Now, once we have the aiders, we no longer need the other aidim waiting outside, but we don't ignore them. We get them involved in the process to make them feel good. The rest of the peers waiting outside, they would just ask them general questions without getting into nitty-gritty details. Not because they needed their services, they were really unnecessary. Rather, they shouldn't leave empty-handed, feeling bad. Why? We want to encourage them to come in the future again. So we get them involved in the process, and then we let them go. The mission began with 2 questions. How did you see the moon? Before or after the sun? Then we say, Letzfoina ledroima. It's the same exact question. Hainu lefnei achama, hainu letzfoina. In front of the sun is tzafen. Because when the sun sets, it's setting a bit towards the north. Right? It makes that arc along the south. Then it sets a bit towards the north. So the only real way to see the new moon after the Moilad is right after Shkia. Right? Right by Shkia time, when it starts getting a bit dim, a bit dark, they don't notice that slight sliver, that moon lagging behind the sun. Right? Because of its small size, you won't see it during the day when you get blinded by the sun. It's only Shkia time when it starts getting dusky and dark, you'll see the new moon. Now, as Rashi explains, for us in the northern hemisphere, the sun is always arcing southward. So during winter time, it's a shorter day, so it's a shorter arc along the south. It's going from east to west, but it's hugging the south of the horizon. During the summer, we have a longer day, so the arc gets bigger and bigger. until the longest day of the year, when the sun appears like it's coming out, sunny, it's rising from northeast corner all the way down, arcing down, coming back up northwest corner. And as the days get shorter, it starts getting shorter, shorter, the arc gets smaller and smaller, and eventually, shortest day of the winter, you have the sun emerging from southeast, going towards southwest. But either way, it's always arcing a bit up north as it rises and as it sets. So now, when we speak about the moon, which is pretty much hugging the sun at that time of the year, at that time of the month, and you ask the aide, look, who was that moon? Was it ahead of the sun during sunset, or was it behind? So what are you really asking? Right? Assuming the sun is heading a bit northward as it sets in the west. So you're asking him, was the moon ahead of the sun? Right? So the sun is heading to Tzafin. Is the moon ahead of it? L'fnei Achama. You're basically asking him if the moon was Tzvayna. Was it to the north of the sun? Same question. Right? If the sun is arcing southward and then turns a bit northward during Shkia, and that's when you're going to see that moon, the beginning of the month, you're asking the eight, is the moon ahead of the sun? Or is it behind the sun? What are you really asking him? The sun is going to north, going to Tzafin. So the moon ahead, meaning, is the moon to the north of the sun? When you're asking him, is it Lachrea? Is the moon behind the sun as it sets? Is sun setting first and the moon afterwards? You're really asking him, is it Ladrima? Is it to the south of the sun? It's the same question. Hainu lefnei acham, hainu letzvoina. In front of the sun means to the north of the sun, because the sun is heading north. Hainu l'achachama. When you ask him, well, was the moon behind the sun? You're also asking him, hainu l'drayma. It's exactly to the south of the sun. So why the repetition? It's the same question over and over. Amar Abaye. Let's reinterpret the Mishnah. There are two separate questions being asked. One is regarding the Tzafin and Darin. But that has nothing to do with the first question. When we say Lefnei Achama, what we meant is the unlit part of that moon, the waning portion, the dark portion. Where was he? Was he facing the sun or facing away from the sun? Nothing to do with north, south, east, or west. The moon relative to the sun was the Pegima, the waning portion, the unlit portion, facing the sun or away from the sun? That was the question they asked him. Lefnei achama, meaning the unlit portion facing the sun, which is impossible. But la'achar achama, or is it away from the sun, which is the way it's meant to be? And then we went to ask about Tzafin and Durim, as we explained. Amar Abaye, you know what lefnei la'achar means? Pekimasa, the pekima, the waning portion, the dark, unlit portion. Was it lefnei achama, facing the sun, which is impossible? Or away from the sun. Oh, now you understand the Lashna Mishnah. He responds, the dark portion was facing the sun. We know he's not speaking the truth. Hashem arranges peace amongst the heavenly bodies, the sun and the moon. We know that originally the moon was as big as the sun. The moon complained. We can't have two kings using the same crown. Hashem minimized the Oir HaLevana, made it dark, and now it gets its light from the sun. Hashem wants to keep the peace and keep the Cham and Levana happy and unembarrassed from each other. So what does he do? Ma'olam le'ras o'chama gimasa shelevana. It never happened that the sun experienced, the sun was exposed to the unlit side of the Levana. Number one, v'loy p'gimasa shel keshes, nor was the sun ever facing the empty side of the bow. So you find the rainbow in the sky, right? And you never find that the sun is facing the empty side, the hole of the rainbow, which would appear like it's shooting arrows out. Never happens. Why? Why wouldn't it see Pgimasa Shalavana? Why can't the sun ever see the dark side of the moon? The Chalsha Data, because it would cause the Levana to be embarrassed. Look, I'm drawing my light from the sun. It causes him embarrassment. And therefore, Hashem avoided this situation, so that the sun never see the dark side of the Levana, which will bring him embarrassment. Now the Ritva says, obviously, the Metzias is, it can't light, can't reflect, if it's facing the other way. So what does the Gemara mean? It was done to avoid Chalishas Adas. So he says the Gemara means Hashem had endless ways of arranging things otherwise. The moon could have its own light, albeit smaller than the sun, but it could be its own source of light. It could have gotten light from elsewhere, a different star. Hashem arranged it in this manner, Dafka, in a way that the sun would not see the dark side of the moon, to avoid Chalishas Adas. What about Pgimasa Shel Keshes? We say the sun never faces the empty side of the bow, the hollow side, the back side. To loylemru of the achama, to prevent the worshippers of the sun, who considered like a god, they shouldn't have the ability to say Giri Kamishadi. Look, the sun, which is facing the back of the bow, looks like it's facing outward and shooting stars, shooting arrows to all those who deny the power of the sun. So therefore, they're never arranged in this manner to avoid any misconception. Okay, so we discussed the first question in the Mishnah, Lefnei Achama, which means the unlit portion of that moon, was it facing the sun, or facing away from the sun? Of course, the true answer is La'achar Achama, and therefore, if he says Lefnei Achama, Lo'y Amar Klum. Let's just see another piece of Gemara, which is connected to the previous one. Kama Yogavoya Ola'ayin Ha'yonayt. Okay, continues the Gemara. Tana V'noitana Brais. Tana Chad, we learned in a brisa. Let's find a dvar of kayam. The drama loy amar klum. This is referring to the position of the moon. If he says, let's find a, makes sense. We believe him. This is in response to the question of let's find a drama, right? So he says, let's find a, that works. The drama, but if he says the moon was to the south of the sun, loy amar klum, apparently. He's not speaking the truth. So that's one braisa. That Safin is a check, Durim is an X. Vatani Ifcha. What about the braisa that put it in the reverse order? The aide responded by saying, Lidraima, the moon was found, was noticed, was observed to the south of the sun, Tvar of Kayamin. We believe him. It makes sense. It works. Litzvayna lemarklum, but if it's to the Safin of the sun, apparently he's not speaking the truth. So we have a stereo between one brisa and the other. Which way is correct? Where is the moon meant to be? To the north of the sun or the south of the sun? Answers the Gemara. Like Kasha, the answer is very simple. Depends what time of the year. Depends if it's summer or winter. And Rashi explains like this. As we mentioned earlier, for us in the northern hemisphere, the sun is to the south. So it's always going to be arcing a bit southernward. Only difference between summer and winter is that in the summer you have longer days, just because of the tilt of the axis, right? In the summer, those on top will have a longer day, right? Right, you're coming around a longer part of that that circle during daytime, whereas during winter time, the ones in northern hemisphere are having a shorter day, right? They spend less time in daylight. Okay, that's just the way it works based on the tilt of the earth. Now, either way, the sun will appear rising from the east and setting at the west, but a bit southward from the top of the sky, right? So now, during the winter, it's going to be arcing southward, but a short arc, going from east to west and just hugging the south, a short arc. Whereas in the summer, when you have a longer day, so you'll have a longer, more pronounced arc, right? Starting on the longest day of the year, you'll start from the northeast corner, arc downward towards the south, run along the south, and make your way back up. This is the sun. So it's going to appear to us. It's making its way back up to the northern western corner. Okay? So long day starts up on top, northeast, goes down, arcs down, comes back up to northwest. On a short day, it starts pretty much on bottom, southeast, and sets southwest. A very short arc. Okay? Says Rashi that the Levana is always to be found in pretty much the same area. Southwest. In the time of Chiddush, time of Moilad, you'll find it at the southwest corner. Oh! Says Rashi, that's what the Gemara means. Sometimes you'll have the Levana ahead of the sun, sometimes behind the sun. Sometimes it's going to be more north than the sun. When is that? During the winter, when the sun is pretty much almost going on a straight line, going from southeast over the south to southwest and setting, in which case the moon, which is at southwest corner, is more north. That's what Rashi says. It's more north than that sun. Because the sun barely goes into that northern curve. It just barely goes into it. So the moon, which is already there beforehand, and more north than where that sun would set, is considered Lutzafain, right? It's more north than that sun. Right? Again, the moon is meant to be found at the southern western corner. And the sun, during the winter, makes that very short arc and sets right here, behind the moon. In which case, the moon is to the north of that sun during sunset, which is the time when you'll see that moon. So if you say Litzvayna, you're okay, you're safe. That's the way it is. As opposed to summertime, where the sun makes a large, much larger arc. Right? You have a longer day, so you have a longer arc, starting all the way at the northeast corner, making its way down around the south, all the way back up to the northwest corner. The moon is down here all the time, at the southwestern corner, in which case the sun at sunset is ahead of the moon, more north than the moon. So in this case, when you ask, hey, where's the moon? North or south of that sun? The answer should be south. Right? So the point here is that during summer, the sun makes a much larger arc, in which case it ends up more north than during the winter. And the moon, which is right here, at sunset summertime, is behind the sun, is more south than the sun, whereas during winter, the sun is beneath it, because it makes a smaller arc, so it's beneath that moon, in which case the moon is Litzafin of the sun. That's the answer to the kasha. Sometimes it's meant to be Litzafin of the sun, sometimes a dar. That explains the two brises. Okay, let's quickly review today's daf. We discussed the varieties of cedar to be found in the world. We learned about one who's loy mitoyre melamda, what chuster is. We learned about the bonfires used to signal the Bnei Bavel. We learned about the Edom on Shabbos. Originally, they were stuck in the chatzar. Rav Gamliel gave them a tchum of 2,000 amma. We learned about the sudois. We learned about the bedikas ha'edim and sensitivity Hashem exhibits towards his creations. Kol tov to you and much, much atzlocha.